Good Friday afternoon, and welcome to the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Sokolu Village studio. It's May 28th. I'm Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sawadita Sun, sitting in for Bill, who's back in town and resting after his precarious Alaskan adventure. The show broadcasts live Monday through Friday at noon, or you can catch the live stream or access all the archives at buckmastershow.com. On Friday, Bill gives a shout-out to the Buckmaster Show media partners, which include TucsonSentinel.com, the Green Valley News, Sawadita Sun, Tucson Local Media, and Tucson Weekly. You'll find all of those and more on his website, buckmastershow.com. Our Friday Focus interview today is going to take up the bulk of the show as we talk about journalism, where it is, where it's going, why it matters. You can join us. If you have a question or comment, call us at 790-2040. That's the Buckmaster Show live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate, and Property Management. We have three people joining us today in studio. We have Michael McKisson. He's a professor and associate director of the School of Journalism at the University of Arizona. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Alana Minkler is a recent journalism grad from U of A. Welcome and congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And on the phone, we have Steve Strickbine. He is the president of Times Media Group. They recently purchased Tucson Local Media, which includes Tucson Weekly, The Explorer, Inside Tucson Business, and more. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you.
Great to have you. Well, we have all heard the numbers, many of which come from a 2018 study out of the University of North Carolina. Since 2004, about 1,800 metro and community newspapers in the United States have gone out of business. That's about 20% of the total, and no doubt it's been a lot more since then. Just during the pandemic, dozens of newspapers have cut the number of days of print. They've merged with other publications, or they've closed altogether. Thousands of journalists laid off, staffs cut to the bone, and an industry is it's fighting to survive, pretty much. Steve, we're going to start with you. Given all that, is this really the time to be buying newspapers?
Well, I'd say I get some strange looks every once in a while when I tell people I'm buying newspapers. I always say I go to lunch with somebody and tell them that, and then they kind of act like, "Wow, should I pick up the check?" But to say newspapers, I guess that I get that question a lot. My answer is typically that I don't feel like we're buying newspapers as much as we're buying loyal audiences that have been loyal to these newspapers. And how we reach them with community news can be done, in a variety of ways. So, but that's how I look at it. I think the newspaper has served its purpose over the years, building that loyalty. And, there's a lot of ways to reach people now. And using digital and augmenting that is one of the big challenges and opportunities, I think, in our industry.
So tell us a little bit about your background and then about your entry into the Tucson market and why you're here. And in fact, you're really fresh into this market, just April, I think.
That's correct. Yeah. So we closed on Tucson Local Media on April 30th. Well, I'm a native of the Valley of Phoenix, and I grew up in Phoenix. My wife is from Tucson. She still has quite a bit of family there. My background is just two things. I was a CPA and got tired of that. Thought I just didn't want to sit in an office cooped up all the time. Mm-hmm. And decided to get into the journalism field, I guess, by starting a community newspaper in Scottsdale, Arizona. So just a true entrepreneurial story, literally was doing everything from writing to delivering papers to my wife actually initially started out teaching and then quit her job and came to work with me in the company. And we built it as a family business and began acquiring other community publications in about 2009 and have since done a number of transactions here in the Phoenix metro area, now in Tucson and also in Los Angeles.
So in 2009, everything was really going to pot and we knew we were in trouble. Were you getting a lot of bargains back then?
Well, not just bargains. I mean, I think you found things that were for sale that were never for sale before. I think a lot of owners got caught without an exit strategy and basically started thinking, gosh, what am I going to do? So what we were able to do is make some good deals that were very strong, I think, win-wins. And, so there were some, I won't say there were not bargains. I mean, there definitely have been many, as we know, throughout this industry over the past decade.
Then what interested you about Tucson?
Well, you know, we're looking to expand into other markets where it makes sense, and that really makes a lot of sense for us. Obviously, we're based in Arizona. I love the publications. I mean, you know, I think they have all a very good reputation, and that's something that was very attractive about it, as well as, you know, it just fits very well and aligns very well with what we do, which is going to publish mostly weekly community newspapers. And the Explorer and Tucson Weekly, obviously two very good titles in that market, were very, very attractive.
Do you plan on any immediate changes down here in Tucson?
No. So, you know, what we plan to do is just continue to make if any changes, you know, just get better every day. I mean, that's kind of one of the mantras around here. So our idea is to, you know, just try to improve what's already going on there. Obviously, the COVID year of COVID has been very difficult for all publications, I'd say, on some level at least. But so coming out of that, you know, it's a little, we're just kind of going as far as we can see. And when we get there, we'll be able to see further. But I'm very confident about, you know, the things we plan to do down there. So we've got some good things.
I'm sure you looked at the books from the past year. How did they do during COVID?
Definitely, like I said, you know, I think every community newspaper was hit pretty hard. So, yeah, I mean, you know, business is down, no question. But there's, you know, we're gonna keep coming out of this, and I feel like it's really starting to gain some traction now, I think, business-wise with small to medium-sized companies.
Okay, we're going to take it over to Michael McKisson, and he is at the University of Arizona. And for students, is journalism a tough sell these days? Get them to study it?
I mean, there's definitely, you know, we've seen a reduction in the number of students who are signing up to be journalism majors, for sure. But that tracks with the industry, right? And we were talking earlier that, you know, students want to finish their degree and have a job that pays them well. And so if they are looking at the journalism industry and saying, you know, I don't know that there's a job for me, that they may not then sign up, even if they care about journalism. We, of course, do have the passionate journalism students that are going to do it regardless. But I think until we can fix the business model of journalism and provide good jobs for journalism students who have graduated, it is going to be a tougher sell. So, you know, there has been a reduction, but we've kind of stabilized around kind of 350, 375 majors and 75 or so minors.
We have newspapers in 11 states, all west of the Mississippi, and roughly 30 newspapers. And we had a situation recently. We were trying to hire a reporter at one of these papers, and we were rejected 13 times before we got someone to come on board. And I think money was part of it, probably at least half of those. And so really that's what you're saying is you got to pay them a living wage for some, and a lot of ours are in pretty remote communities that aren't really that expensive. Some of them are, but for the most part, they just need to be making a living wage. What's a living wage?
Well, I mean, that's dependent, right? I think that there is, you know, when you and I came up in the industry, right, the idea was you would go work at a small regional publication, you know, cut your teeth, and then move up.
Right.
I think there is a bit of a desire to sort of skip that step and go work for places that are more exciting to begin with, given that there are massive more opportunities of different kinds of publications. You know, whether or not you're going to get a job there in, you know, Mashable or whatever, right out of J school is another story. But so I think that there's the money, and then probably, as you mentioned, the kind of small regional areas that maybe aren't that appealing to young folks. We've had a couple of students that have gone and worked in those little places.
Sure.
And they immediately want to try and get to somewhere that's got a nightlife and a,
right,
you know.
Which is an interesting point, because we are trying to remind students that, look, if you sign on with this newspaper in the middle of nowhere, this isn't your life, okay? This is going to be a couple of years, and the nightlife, look, you just studied 4 years for this degree for something you want to do. This is an opportunity to do it. But we are hearing that, too. It's like, well, it's too far from, you know, the biggest night spot. And I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. And the this is probably the only time in your life you're going to live in a place like this. Why don't you soak it up?
Yeah, I mean, I can see that, but I can also see, like, I mean, you want to have a quality of life, right? And so you know, I mean, if that's the kind of thing that's important to you, you want to be able, your job doesn't always define you, right? Like mm-hmm. it's a big important part of it. But you know, you want to be able to do other things. So I can see both sides to that.
Sure.
For sure.
Alana, you surely you've seen, you've heard the statistics, you've read about the slow demise of the industry, which I think is a myth largely. It's just being kind of transformed. Why did you get into journalism? Why this?
Yeah, I've always loved reading and writing and researching, and I saw journalism as an opportunity to share people's stories and hopefully spread compassion towards one another. That's really why I went into journalism. I knew I wasn't going to make a lot of money, and I knew journalism, well, the myth that journalism is dying just isn't true. It's like you said, it's just transitioning.
What do you think your first job is going to look like? And I know you're a fresh grad, you're looking for that first opportunity now. What do you think that first job is going to look like? And then where do you want to be?
I really don't know, but I guess I picture myself working for a small local newspaper because that's ultimately what I want to do is, I guess, help the community. But that's kind of where I see myself starting.
Okay.
And then we'll see what happens after that.
And what's the market look like now?
It's a little bit tough just because it seems like the pandemic really like slowed things down. But I'm hopeful.
Okay. Steve, I want to bring you back in. Newspapers, they're a business, but they're also a community service. And my wife and I read newspapers for the articles, and she likes the ads, but then, you know, she eventually gets to the articles. So people read it for different reasons. We understand that. But the business and the community service, one doesn't work without the other. Speak to your commitment, Times Media Group's commitment to both of those.
Well, you know, it is, you're right. So, but I think that everything, both of those things have to be working in you know, tandem. They have, there has to be fiscal, you know, and financial responsibility. And you know, I think that we're, I guess what we see ourselves as is as kind of having a good model that works really well. And it's augmented with a lot of digital things that we can sell, kind of recognizing our position in the market, which is we have served, you know, these communities for many, many years with a weekly newspaper that gives them news about City Hall, about the school district, about just, you know, community initiatives. And we believe that, you know, that's a great piece of gravity, you know, and I think that there's that's a glass half full kind of look at it, but that's how I see it. And I mean, I also see it as, you know, when we say 20% of these community newspapers have gone away, you know, 80% of them then are still around. So if it's 25%, it's 75% of them are still hanging in there. And I think that the ones that are doing that are doing kind of, as I'm saying, we're trying to, you know, augment our revenue by, you know, telling stories of the businesses in the community in a way that doesn't violate, you know, the old, you know, church and state, but
sure.
Also being, you know, mindful of the fact that we have to be willing to adapt our model to, you know, current circumstances. I do also believe that it is, you know, this is the transition period, and I think that it's companies that are sharpening their saw and figuring out different ways to, like I said, come up with some creative solutions to these complex problems, you know, are still doing pretty well. And it, unfortunately, is always seeming to me to be lumped into one place. You know, newspapers, as we started the conversation, there's so many different newspapers serving different communities, you know, whether they're community papers, dailies, have a whole set of different issues and challenges.
Okay, we are talking with some titans of the journalism industry in our Friday Focus interview. Let's lighten it up a bit, talk about some wonderful food. Mona's Danish Bakery on the northeastern corner of Swan and Sunrise. That's the home of the Danish Kringle, made famous by Bill's show, no doubt. Mona's is open for breakfast, lunch, with indoor and patio dining, plus online orders and pickup. Mona's is open Monday through Saturday, 6:30 to 3, Sunday 7 to 2. Mona's, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. You're listening to the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Socolow Village studio. Our live line is made possible by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We'll be right back.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com. A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
I'm Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sorita Sun, sitting in for Bill. You're listening to the Buckmaster Show. We're talking journalism with Michael McKisson. He's a professor at the University of Arizona. And congratulations, Michael, for your recent honor from the College of Social and Behavioral Sciences, which houses the School of Journalism. I know they think you are a good teacher.
Well, that's what the award said. I hope so. I hope the students think so. That's what I care about.
Okay. We also have student Alana Minkler and on the phone Steve Strickbein. He is the president of Times Media Group out of Tempe and the new owner of Tucson Weekly and several other publications down our way. And Michael, we were talking about the business end of this before we went to break, and Steve had some interesting thoughts on that, and so did you. And you said something that probably could have got you injured years ago in a newsroom, and that is that journalists need to have a seat at the table when we're talking about business models.
Yeah, I think that's entirely accurate. I mean, you know, we saw with that separation of church and state, and it was there for a valid reason, right? We don't want the business side deciding what it is we cover and how we cover things. I mean, absolutely, nobody wants that. I don't want that. But journalists are the, like, touch point from the news and the community, and they really have probably a better sense of what's going on in the community than anyone in a news organization. And so having them be at the table to know A, what's important to the community, and B, how you might be able to take that information and make it something that's valuable to the company, I think is a win-win situation for everyone.
Alana, out of my own morbid curiosity, you were in school a lot during the Trump administration. How do you think that things played out between the administration and the press at that time? And I'm talking about how he treated the press and how the press treated him. And I'm assuming that it was the subject of a lot of talks on campus. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, the Trump administration really made it hard for journalists to trust the administration and like breach that gap and learn more about the administration. But also on the other side, it made it really hard to break down the distrust in the community, especially among his supporters. I remember I was doing a story for one of my classes on an ammo shortage, and I tried to go to the ammo shops and interview the people in line. And a lot of them were very, they were very like going on these political rants, but they did not trust me. They didn't want to give me their name. They really were very distrustful of the media.
Right. And I wonder how long that's going to last. And but do you think some of that's warranted? Do you think that the president was treated fairly at all times during his 4 years?
I do think we should look at the media critically, but not lump the media, air quotes, into one word, because there's just so many different types of media organizations. And some we should look at their agendas. But on the other hand, we need to have trust so that the public can get that information and make it and use it to make good decisions.
All right. I would say that probably 99% of the time when somebody quits the paper or has a gripe about the paper, it's about the opinion pages, which are opinion. And so my comment is that when the opinion starts showing up in the news pages, then we should all be concerned. But right now, it's not, never has on my watch. But that distrust is everywhere. Michael?
There's a ton of media literacy issues among the general population. I think some of it is journalism. We've done a bad job really differentiating the opinion section online versus the news section online.
Sure.
You go to a website and it's like this tiny little word that says opinion, right? In a newspaper, when we opened it up, it was a whole section with a big masthead. It was obvious that it was opinion. But I teach a gen ed class where my whole mission is to provide some media literacy to the students so that when they walk out of that class, they can, look at a news organization, understand what the agenda of it is, whether or not it's a, for better or worse, fair and balanced news source.
Sure.
And they come in without those skills at all. And I think that's indicative of society as a whole.
Steve, we all know everything is heading digital and has been for, three decades. What are you doing in Times Media Group to get ready for this? And how are things changing? And are you getting more digital subscribers than print? Or what are you guys learning and what are you exploring?
I guess on just reaching readers' side of things, we are continuing to print a high volume of papers and throw them on driveways every week. And I say sometimes that, even if that is acting as our brochure, just for some readers. In other words, it's sort of reminding them that we are the community news source, and what we provide you with in terms of news on the school district and things that I mentioned earlier, you really can't get anywhere else. I mean, you can go on Facebook and you can get opinions, but you're not going to be getting a lot of facts. And I think that's a really important thing for us is to, provide balanced news coverage of the community on our website. So if they, are to go to the Explorer's website, or they're going to pick it up in their driveway. Either way, they're going to get that information from us. But on the business side, I think, you know, it's just being, as I said, you know, being creative about understanding our position in the community, which in the business community means that, you know, they see us as well in communities as being, having been there since the beginning. You know, we have a variety of communities where we serve both Phoenix, well, all over actually, that have, you know, the paper's been there since before there were any businesses, or, you know, right around the same time. So the businesses see us as a credible, you know, organization for that reason. So if we come in to sell them advertising, we can sell them more than just advertising in our newspaper. You know, we have access to all the other digital products that any ad agency or any digital's advertising company can sell. So we can augment our offering with a lot of other things that bring value to the businesses and the community.
Alana, digital has really transformed journalism, and it seems like it's transforming it every 6 months. There's a new, you know, whiz-bang idea out there about how to cover communities and this and that, and a lot of them end up falling by the wayside. But as a student watching this play out, and now as a graduate, do you feel like you are going into the professional world equipped to kind of handle some of these changes that are being thrown at journalism? Can you do more than just write and report?
I think since I only started journalism 3.5 years ago, when everything was changing, I'm kind of like used to the idea that it's going digital, but I don't think, like, I think we could do a better job teaching digital, like doing more, because like a lot of our journalism professors kind of grew up like with more of that legacy media and not being in the field like how it is now. And so learning more about podcasting and multimedia is really important, and it's something that I wish I would have focused more on.
I think that's a really good point. And Michael, though, I will tell you what I'm seeing coming out of the universities is we're trying to hire at all of our newspapers, and that is that people who can do a lot of the things that Alana was referring to, you know, with podcasts and interactive maps and this and that, but a lot of them still are missing the basics. They don't know how to write and report. And that's really frustrating that they can do all these things that are flashy, but in the end, they're not asking the right questions.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. I mean, so we, you know, we look at all the things that are going on in media, right? And yes, as you mentioned, right, like the whiz bang things that are new. And I'm a tech guy, right? Like
sure.
That's my jam.
Yep.
I'm a nerd. And you know, we got into VR journalism very early. It didn't take off, right? Mm-hmm. But
virtual reality for those who at home.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, I'm doing drones right now, right? I'm that's my new thing, is using drones to tell stories. But the reality is the tools are always going to change, right? They, a year from now, we're going to be talking about something different. What doesn't change is the foundations. And so we've been really trying to look at our curriculum, and how do we make sure that students are getting the foundations that they need? What is a story, right? Like, we see, you know, students will come in at the beginning and they'll want to do a story about the General Benz. It's been on University Boulevard. This is their headline, right? General Benz has been on University Boulevard for 33 years, or however long General Benz has been there. It's like, okay, that's not news.
Longer.
Yeah, right? And so, you know, we try and get them those foundations. And you know, some students really get it, like Alana, right? And then others struggle with it,
right.
and have a tough time.
Well, it's interesting because the I always used to say, you know, can you write and can you report and maybe shoot a photo? But now I'm saying, can you recognize a story? Can you go into General Benson's and when you walk in there, it's like, wow, this was just invented. Yeah, like 4 decades ago. What is the story, though? What can you identify a story? That is so valuable. And I will tell you, so many perspective reporters flame out in that portion of the interview. It's just, you just get a sense that they're going to report on what's in front of them. And so that enterprising person is just not coming out, or maybe isn't even there.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that, like, I struggle with in the class is students, well, I don't have a story yet. Like, I don't know what to what to do.
Yeah.
And like one of the things that I will frequently do is assign a community, like a neighborhood or a zip code. And they'll come to me and they'll say, Alana's smirking because she had to do this. She never came to me with this question, but you know, what story should I do? And I say, well, what's going on in your community? Well, I don't know. And I said, well, you have to go into that community and talk to people. Like
Absolutely.
If there's someone outside watering their plants, ask them what they're thinking about, what's happening. And, you know, and I don't know if that's like a social media thing and where they're just used to information coming to them. And so there's this switch that you have to flip to get them out to do it.
Yeah, all good points. This is the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Socolo Village studio. And when we return, you are invited to join us on the live line, made possible by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, 790-2040, as we continue our discussion of journalism. We'll be right back.
Enjoy the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley. Savor the view while sipping on locally brewed craft beer and enjoying gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, at West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley and on the web at noblehops.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Shear, sitting in for Bill, and we're talking about journalism. On the line, we have Steve Strickbine, and he is the president and founder of Times Media Group out of the Phoenix area. Steve, we have seen over the last decade, probably even more, some companies come in, they buy these big media operations, and they just strip them down to nothing, and then they walk away. Are you in it for the long haul here in Tucson?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that, you know, again, I mean, if we look at newspapers just as a, you know, the newspaper industry, what you just said is very, very true. You know, but that's true in every industry that's in its, you know, basically twilight, you know, in its cash cow phase, I guess. They're susceptible to takeovers and just kind of, you know, the sell-off. But I think in community newspapers like the ones that we own and, you know, WIC owns and throughout the country, you know, it's a very different business. So for myself, I'm very much in this for the long haul. I'm in it for the right reasons. And, you know, I'm not always, you know, the most popular, you know, individual, I guess, when we come into a market. But, you know, what we're trying to do is find real practical solutions and ways to, you know, keep these publications going. And not only that, but to ultimately enhance them and utilize, like I said, utilizing technology in a variety of ways to make that a little bit easier.
Well, one man's observation, mine, the newspapers that you bought or the operation that you bought down here is grossly understaffed. I don't know about pay. I don't know what they make, but it seems like they're trying to cover these increasingly growing and relevant, important communities with less and less. I'm going to throw a cliche at you and see if it's true. Is content really king?
Well, yeah, I think it's, you know, is a lot of what you just said is potentially just a function of how, you know, those publications were being run. I mean, you know, there is certainly some advantages that come with, you know, for instance, our company owning a number of other weeklies in terms of scale and ability to shift, you know, labor. You know, the people working on a publication, for instance, could very well be in an office somewhere else, right? I mean, I think technology allows us to cover a lot of things now that in a different way than we used to. I mean, a good example or an extreme example would be somebody that had to go to the city council meeting and sit there through all of the minutia, when today you can go to the city council's website or, you know, your city's website and watch that online and fast forward through the part they're talking about, you know, moving the fire hydrant. So I think there's ways to use technology, you know, in that regard. So I guess I'm just thinking that, you know, we're gonna go as far as we can see, and I think hopefully you can understand that. I mean, coming out of a pandemic, yeah, you know, I think a lot of companies are understaffed right now, no question, whether it's in the newspaper industry or elsewhere.
Michael, you and I were talking earlier. There are not only changes in how things are being covered, and you talked about you being kind of a technoid, and there are different ways to cover things, and that's important, but also what we cover is changing. And I gave you the example off air that we have not had a sports reporter in Green Valley and Sahuarita for, I think, going on 4 years, actually, and we really haven't missed it. Doesn't mean that we're not covering those sports, but we're not covering them like they were before, because we realized, and years of reader studies would tell you this, but it is a very narrow audience, but it's a loyal audience. So 15% is going to sound like 50% of your audience, and it really just wasn't there, and I've had no problem. You would get shanghaied if you did that in a lot of the WIC markets, because it's very, very important that those high schools are covered. But what are some of the things that we've had to back off on, we just don't need anymore, and what does that free us up to do with those resources?
I mean, I think every community is different, right? And so you've got to know what is important to the communities that you're serving. You know, one of the things I think that we've done, you know, we're going to pull back on certain things in different communities. One of the things I think we've done a pretty poor job is covering diverse communities and really serving that audience.
But why are they important if they are a tiny minority and may not even read your publication?
Well, they're not reading because we're not serving them. Right. And so if you look at a tiny minority, 43% of the population in Tucson or in Pima County is Hispanic. Mm-hmm. That's a huge market that you're missing by not serving them. And there is value to serving that community and then figuring out the business side of it. So I think looking at the places that, you know, your sports example, right, in your community, it didn't matter. And you know, this kind of goes back to the conversation that we were talking about with journalists being the like touch point in the community and really having a good sense of what's going on. One of the classes that I teach is product development. But the idea is basically, and I think you've benefited from some of the students that have come out of
absolutely.
That class.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Is really understanding your community, figuring out what's valuable, doing more of that and doing less of the things that aren't valuable, and then trying to serve communities that we're not serving well.
If I have three reporters covering an area of about 75,000 people, one of them is not going to be spun off to do diversity issues. Am I missing something by not doing that?
I mean, I think, you know, again, it's all about the community in which you are practicing journalism, right? Like, I don't know the Sierra Vista community and the Green Valley community well enough to know that you're missing something there or not. In Tucson, yes, I think you are, if you're not covering 43% of the population.
Well, but that 43%, you're making a big assumption that they do not share the interests of the other 57%. You know, good schools, decent roads, things like that. I mean, and so really, you are covering them. You're not covering 43% of your people.
That's a good point. I think it's, you know, are you covering it in a way that speaks to that audience? Or are you covering it in a way that speaks to the subscribers in the foothills?
Right.
I mean, if you look at, like, let's say education coverage is generally, in most communities, covered from a taxpayer perspective,
mm-hmm.
right? With as an adult with two children, I care much more about what's happening inside the classroom than a taxpayer perspective. And so I think knowing who your audience is and covering the stories for that audience is what we should be striving for.
And, you know, that gets back to the original question of how we cover things, because I have always said, get into the classroom, not the boardroom. Not that we don't need to be there at the board meetings, but what's going on in those classrooms is far, far more interesting and more impactful for families and kids. Tell me if my taxes are going to go up because of education, then leave it at that. But these long, boring stories on school budgets or on even city budgets, just ask them, is there an anomaly here? Is there something different, okay? For instance, the Sarita budget went up by over 50% from last year to this year. Okay, it's worth stopping everything and saying, why, where'd you get the money, what are you gonna spend it on? I get it. But when it goes up 2% and there's no significant changes, but we are molded to believe, and I hope Alana is not like this, that, oh, it's a budget, it must be important. No, it isn't. This is the reason Steve got out of CPA, because it's boring stuff. You know, it may be important, but it's not that important for your audience. Steve, back to we're talking about media and covering news and all that type of stuff. But what about other things like newsletters, events, podcasts, whatever? Are you venturing out into this, and how hard and how important is it to Times Media?
Somewhat, you know, I guess we are with different publications to varying degrees. And I just, you know, I feel like being in this industry, I guess right now is a bit of a balancing act. You know, you have to really look at some of those things and the resources they consume and really make a call on whether or not you feel like it's worth the investment. I mean, I think newsletters are getting to be more, successful, I guess, at reaching communities that are turning into news deserts now. I mean, we see there's some companies. I know of a Canadian company, for instance, that has a very ambitious plan to put newsletters in, you know, communities all throughout the country. And if they're done well, and I think to Michael's point, you know, the content has to reach its audience and it has to speak to that audience. I don't see any reason why those kinds of things aren't going to be successful. But for us, for now, you know, we just have to be very careful. And I think that becomes part of our core competency, right, is how we operate our business, where we see things, working and kind of expanding those and making sure that we're listening to the feedback on the things that are not working and getting rid of those, in due course so that they don't end up killing the things that are.
And Steve, what about the entry of nonprofits into media? And up in Phoenix, you have AZ Mirror. Jim Small is the editor there. He's excellent. That's one example. We have TucsonSentinel.com down here, operated by Dylan Smith. They fill a gap, but are they really going to be the answer?
You know, I just I would say I think they serve a great purpose, and I mean, I think they become good resources for reporters, for other reporters in the communities, you know, as well. Do they look to be something that would be a long-term solution? I just don't know. I mean, I don't see how they could be unless they have some kind of, ultimately some kind of grant, or the, you know, the population really recognizes the need for those types of organizations and would be willing to donate to them. But, you know, I don't think we've seen that to a large degree so far.
Michael, are nonprofits the answer?
I think that entrepreneurship, nonprofit, starting your own organization is the answer. I think that, you know, we've seen what corporations come in and do frequently to news organizations. I actually got my start as I worked at the Star, but I also had a website that was an entrepreneurial website that covered cycling, and it was profitable. This was years before all of the resources that exist now. I think it's part of the answer. May not be the only answer. I think you're going to see more smaller sort of publications, nonprofits, startups that are going to fill those voids. So I think it is part of the solution.
Alana, we're going to give you the last word. We've got about 30 seconds here. U of A has a fine journalism program. ASU has poured millions and millions and millions of dollars into theirs, and they have a quite well-known one. Why U of A?
I picked U of A because I just saw it as the best option between the two state schools. And then I decided to go into journalism, and I was very happy. And I would, if I could go back, I would still pick the U of A.
Very good. Okay, that's going to wrap up our Friday Focus interview. Our thanks to Michael McKisson and Alana Minkler from the University of Arizona. Thanks for being here. And on the phone, Steve Strickbine, president of Times Media Group. Steve, I really enjoyed it. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.
We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Socolow Village studio with Matt Russell to help you plan your long Memorial Day weekend. Don't forget our live line. It's made possible by the professionals over at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We'll be back in a minute.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim,
CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
It's time for the Weekend Watch, a great way to plan your holiday weekend, presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. They are more than ready to welcome you back with open arms. They are just 3 hours east of Tucson. There is so much to do in Silver City and Grant County, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument, and find out more, because there is a lot more. I've been through there. It's a beautiful place. Go to southwestnewmexico.org. On the line, we have Matt Russell. Welcome back from vacation.
Oh, so nice to be back. Well, not really. I was in Hawaii, but I'll say it anyway. So nice to be back, man. Hey, and let me just say, great show today. You know, as a PR practitioner, I follow these issues very closely, and you really curated a great show today. So hats off.
Sir. Well, I got to tell you, this is Bill's plan to do this every year or so, because he just thinks it's so important, and everything is changing so rapidly. Yep. We just kind of can keep the finger on the pulse there, and I think we had three really fantastic guests, and we'll see what Steve Strickbein brings into the Tucson market as he has come in and bought Tucson local media. But
indeed, the paper I write for. Yeah,
there we go. off to more fun things. What's going on this 3-day weekend?
Well, you know, when it comes to firing up the grill on Memorial Day weekend, supporting local purveyors of protein has always been my mantra. One of them is local butcher Ben Forbes of downtown's Forbes Meat Company. Butcher Ben has curated a special Memorial Day butcher box featuring, check it out, 2 pounds of sirloin, 2 pounds of skirt steak, 3 pounds of ground beef, a rack of ribs, a whole spatchcock chicken, and 4 Wagyu beef hot dogs, all for just $60. The only things missing are the French hens and the turtle doves, but you can place your order online like I did. It'll be ready for pickup starting today. Check out ForbesMeatCompany.com.
And that's 15 more pounds for those who buy that. So, but absolutely,
exactly right.
Absolutely worth it. So, terrific. And I think this is the first time I've ever seen you mentioning or suggesting a meat company. They must be good.
Exactly right. Love them. Absolutely.
Okay. What else we have?
Well, another restaurant is reopening, which has created some buzz this week. Riley Craft Pizza and Drink on Pennington Street, which has been really closed for the entire course of COVID. That means well over a year. They're open again. You'll see many of your favorite pizzas and such on the freshened up menu, along with some new things as well. And they're also marking this reopening with plans for a 2,000 square foot rooftop patio, which is going to crown this historic building that we all know served as a funeral home for nearly a century. I think a return to Riley should be on your weekend.
Absolutely. You cannot have too many pizza restaurants in a town like Tucson. They're awesome. So what else we have?
Well, you know, there's going to be a lot of shaking and stirring on Monday afternoon, and I'm not talking about martinis, Dan. This is all about the Michelada, a beverage made with beer and tomato juice and limes and spices, and the local chapter of the U.S. Bartenders Guild will host a Memorial Day Michelada competition at 3 o'clock at Crooked Tooth Brewing Company on East 6th Street. 10 local bartenders will assemble their best for the rather august panel of judges, and a People's Choice Award will also be conferred, which means the public can sample them all and cast their votes as well. $10 gets you in the door for a ringside seat for what I think is a lot of madness.
Okay, very good. And because I'm kind of stuck on Forbes Meat Company, tell us again that website.
Yeah, www.ForbesMeatCompany, all spelled out, .com.
And then the basics of the Michelada competition again?
Yeah, so you're going to have 10 local bartenders assembling their best Micheladas for judging, 3 o'clock p.m. on Memorial Day at Crooked Tooth Brewing Company on East 6th Street.
Okay, and we just had your new boss on the air. Inside Tucson Business is one of the publications that Steve Strickbein,
yep,
and his Times Media have purchased. What do you got going in your column this week?
A new restaurant is fusing Sonoran and Italian culinary cultures, and I got the full story from the two local chefs who partnered on this concept that connects the Mediterranean Sea with the Rialto River. It's all in this week's edition of Inside Tucson Business.
That sounds fantastic. Thank you, Matt Russell, for your great insights.
Cheers, Dan. Always great to talk to you.
Thank you. And it is thank you for joining us today on the Buckmaster Show. The radio program, established in 2011, is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which was responsible for the content of the program. Our thanks to longtime Buckmaster assistant Rosemary Brandt. What would we do without her? Producer engineers John Couch and Tom Fairbanks, and the entire team here at Bustos Media Tucson. You have yourself a great long Memorial Day weekend.